Evening, everyone. This is Mellow Matt, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. My show is called Highly Recommended, and it is full of all of the music that I recommend highly, and this week, I will also be including some science fiction. I haven't plugged in my laptop yet. I'm not sure if I will. We're starting things off with Return to Forever, which is one of Chick Corea's projects, with a medieval overture off of their album Romantic Warrior. And from there, we're going to be hitting a lot of prog, a lot of jazz fusion, and with it all, we're going to have, sci-fi, for at least some of the time. I have a little book of 50 sci-fi short stories from, I'm going to guess, the 60s. I will check back with you when I go and grab it. But other than that, mostly vinyl, if not all vinyl. I think the second hour, I don't know. It's freeform radio, baby. What's that mean? That means that, the way it was explained to me is that if I wanted to crumple a paper bag into a microphone for an hour and call it soundscapes, I could do just that. Luckily for you, I'm going to be doing something a little bit easier to listen to. Hopefully more than just a little bit, but I'll take what I can get. And yeah, so stick around. I'll start reading soonish, I think. And as always, if you want to chat with me, we have a DJ chat on the website at wmfo.org/DJ-chat. And I'll be back momentarily with science fiction.
Stare senza di voi. Thank you. lo si sa. Sempre che è nucola, non gli va mai bene niente, chissà perché. Sempre che è nucola, non gli va mai bene niente, chissà perché.
The Fun They Had by Isaac Asimov. Margie even wrote about it that night in her diary. On the page headed May 17, 2155, she wrote, "Today, Tommy found a real book." It was a very old book. Margie's grandfather once said that, when he was a little boy, his grandfather told him that there was a time when all stories were printed on paper. They turned the pages, which were yellow and crinkly, and it was awfully funny to read words that stood still instead of moving the way they were supposed to, on a screen, you know. And then, when they turned back to the page before, it had the same words on it that it had had when they had read it the first time. "Gee," said Tommy, "what a waste. When you're through with the book, you just throw it away, I guess. Our television screen must have had a million books on it, and it's good for plenty more. I wouldn't throw it away." "Same with mine," said Margie. She was 11 and hadn't seen as many telebooks as Tommy had. He was 13. She said, "Where did you find it?" "In my house," he pointed without looking because he was busy reading. "In the attic." "What's it about?" "School." Margie was scornful. "School? What's there to write about school?" "What's there to write about school? I hate school." Margie always hated school, but now she hated it more than ever. The mechanical teacher had been giving her test after test in geography, and she had been doing worse and worse until her mother had shaken her head sorrowfully and sent for the county inspector. He was a round little man with a red face and a whole box of tools with dials and wires. He smiled at her and gave her an apple, then took the teacher apart. Margie had hoped he wouldn't know how to put it back together again, but he knew how, all right, and after an hour or so, there it was again, large and black and ugly, with a big screen on which all the lessons were shown and the questions were asked. That wasn't so bad. The part she hated most was the slot where she had to put homework and test papers. She always had to write them out in a punch code they made her learn when she was 6 years old, and the mechanical teacher calculated the mark in no time. The inspector had smiled after he was finished and patted her head. He said to her mother, "It's not the little girl's fault, Mrs. Jones. I think the geography sector was geared a little too quick. Those things happen sometimes. I've slowed it up to an average 10-year level. Actually, the overall pattern of her progress is quite satisfactory." And he patted Margie's head again. Margie was disappointed. She had been hoping they would take the teacher away altogether. They had once taken Tommy's teacher away for nearly a month because the history sector had blanked out completely. So she said to Tommy, "Why would anyone write about school?" Tommy looked at her with very superior eyes. "Because it's not our kind of school, stupid. This is the kind of school they had that they had hundreds and hundreds of years ago." He added loftily, pronouncing the word carefully, "centuries ago." Margie was hurt. "Well, I don't know what kind of school they had all that time ago." She read the book over his shoulder for a while, then said, "Anyway, they had a teacher." "Sure they had a teacher, but it wasn't a regular teacher, it was a man." "A man? How could a man be a teacher?" "Well, he just told the boys and girls things and gave them homework and asked them questions." "A man isn't smart enough." "Sure he is. My father knows as much as my teacher." "He can't. A man can't know as much as a teacher." "He knows almost as much, I betcha." Margie wasn't prepared to dispute that. She said, "I wouldn't want a strange man in my house to teach me." Tommy screamed with laughter. "You don't know much, Margie. The teachers didn't live in the house. They had a special building and all the kids went there." "And all the kids learned the same thing?" "Sure, if they were the same age. But my mother says a teacher has to be adjusted to fit the mind of each boy and girl it teaches, and that each kid has to be taught differently. Just the same, they didn't do it that way then. If you don't like it, you don't have to read the book. I didn't say I didn't like it, Margie said quickly. She wanted to read all about those funny schools. They weren't even half finished when Margie's mother called, Margie, school! Margie looked up, not yet, Mama! Now, said Mrs. Jones, and it's probably time for Tommy, too. Margie said to Tommy, can I read the book some more with you after school? Maybe, he said nonchalantly. He walked away whistling, the dusty old book tucked beneath his arm. Margie went into the schoolroom. It was right next to her bedroom, and the mechanical teacher was on and waiting for her. It was always on at the same time every day except Saturday and Sunday, because her mother said little girls learned better if they learned at regular hours. The screen was lit up and it said, today's arithmetic lesson is on the addition of proper fractions. Please insert yesterday's homework in the proper slot. Margie did so with a sigh. She was thinking about the old schools they had when her grandfather's grandfather was a little boy. All the kids from the whole neighborhood came, laughing and shouting in the schoolyard, sitting together in the schoolroom, going home together at the end of the day. They learned the same things so they could help one another on the homework and talk about it. And the teachers were people. The mechanical teacher was flashing on the screen, when we add the fractions 1/2 and 1/4. Margie was thinking about how the kids must have loved it in the old days. She was thinking about the fun they had. And that was The Fun They Had by Isaac Asimov. Ah, that was a cute story. They had, like, ebooks and Kindles, but they didn't have, like, digital. You couldn't type up your assignment, you had to do a punch card, which I think is kind of funny, you know? This book was, that story was probably older, but this book was released in 1963, so... Oh, it does say what year all of these are from. The Fun They Had, copyright 1951, so that's what, 73 years ago? You know, they got some things right. Especially when COVID was around and everyone was at home doing all that remote learning stuff. Can't say that was my favorite, but, you know, it's interesting that they got some things right. And, oh, I got a request on the DJ chat, I think. Unless that's an old one. But, yeah, those are cool requests. I will put those on once I grab my laptop, which will probably be sometime in the next hour. Let's see. You know, this is another, you know, the other tough thing, though, about reading, reading sci-fi from the 50s is you never know how well it's aged unless you read it first. But this one, I think, had a Wikipedia page when I looked it up, so it might be better than some of the others. I'm gonna give it a little break, get something to drink, and then I'll be back. Until then, enjoy Jean-Michel Jarre with... What are we up to? I think that we're up to part... Yes, we're up to Oxygen Part 2. Which will be followed by Oxygen Part 3. Thank you. 10 months after the last plane passed over, Rolf Smith knew beyond doubt that only one other human being had survived. Her name was Louise Oliver, and he was sitting opposite her in a department store cafe in Salt Lake City. They were eating canned Vienna sausages and drinking coffee. Sunlight struck through a broken pane, lying like a judgment on the cloudy air of the room. Inside and outside, there was no sound, only a stifling rumor of absence. The clatter of dishware in the kitchen, the heavy rumble of streetcars. Never again. There was sunlight and silence and the watery, astonished eyes of Louise Oliver. He leaned forward, trying to capture the attention of those fish-like eyes for a second. "Darling," he said, "I respect your views, naturally, but I've got to make you see that they're impractical." She looked at him with faint surprise, then away again. Her head shook slightly. "No. No, Rolf, I will not live with you in sin." Smith thought of the women of France, of Russia, of Mexico, of the South Seas. He had spent 3 months in the ruined studios of a radio station in Rochester, listening to the voices until they stopped. There had been a large colony in Sweden, including an English cabinet minister. They reported that Europe was gone, simply gone. There was not an acre that had not been swept clean by radioactive dust. They had 2 planes and enough fuel to take them anywhere on the continent, but there was nowhere to go. 3 of them had the plague, then 11, then all. There was a bomber pilot who had fallen near a government radio in Palestine. He did not last long because in the crash he had broken some bones, but he had seen the vacant waters where the Pacific Islands should have been. It was his guess that the Arctic ice fields had been bombed. He did not know whether that had been a mistake or not. There were reports from Washington, from New York, from London, Paris, Moscow, Chongqing, Sydney. You could not tell who had been destroyed by disease, who by the dust, and who by the bombs. Smith himself had been a laboratory assistant in a team that was trying to find an antibiotic for the plague. His superiors had found one that worked sometimes, but it was a little too late. When he left, Smith took along with him all there was of it, 40 ampules, enough to last him for years. Louise had been a nurse in a genteel hospital near Denver. According to her, something rather odd had happened to the hospital as she was approaching it the morning of the attack. She was quite calm when she said this, but a vague look came into her eyes, and her shattered expression seemed to slip a little more. Smith did not press her for an explanation. Like himself, she had found a radio station which still functioned, and when Smith discovered that she had not contracted the plague, he agreed to meet her. She was, apparently, naturally immune. There had been others, a few at least, but the bombs and the dust had not spared them. It seemed very awkward to Louise that not one Protestant minister was left alive. The trouble was, she really meant it. It had taken Smith a long time to believe it, but it was true. She would not sleep in the same hotel as him either. She expected and received the utmost courtesy and decorum. Smith had learned his lesson. He walked on the outside of the rubble-heaped sidewalks. He opened doors for her when there were still doors. He held her chair. He refrained from swearing. He courted her. Louise was 40 or thereabouts, at least 5 years older than Smith. He often wondered how old she thought she was. The shock of seeing whatever it was that had happened to the hospital, the patients she had cared for, had sent her mind scuttling back to her childhood. She tacitly admitted that everyone else in the world was dead, but she seemed to regard it as something one did not mention. 100 times in the last 3 weeks, Smith had felt an almost irresistible impulse to break her thin neck and go on his own way, but there was no help for it. She was the only woman in the world, and he needed her. If she died or left him, he died. Old bleep, he thought to himself furiously, and carefully kept the thought from showing on his face. "Louise, honey," he told her gently, "I want to spare your feelings as much as I can. You know that." "Yes, Rolf," she said, staring at him with the face of a hypnotized chicken. "And with that, I'm going to have to put on the next album. So I'm going to take a little break. I'm going to reach over and..." We have the B-side of Jean-Michel Jarre's Oxygen. And because we've already listened to a good amount of this album, I should figure out something else to put on for you guys. But in the meantime, this is it. Oh, actually, I just realized all of the songs, except for that last song, which was It Must Be a Camel by Frank Zappa, have been released, or had been released in the year 1976. How about that? Let's see, how much is left in this little short story? We got another couple pages, enough that I'm gonna find another album to put on. But I don't want to leave you with Oxygen again in the background. I'll be quick. Good waiting music, though, I must say. And if any of you listening played Grand Theft Auto 4 and went to the Journey's radio station, this was one of the songs on it, which I think is really funny. Or Journey's, or whatever the New Age radio station was. I am pulling up my laptop so I can find some more exciting voiceover music, because as much as I would love to read over, like, Prague, I just don't think, you know what, actually, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna do exactly that. Is my radio show, and it is Freeform Radio, and you can't tell me that Tarkus is too loud to read a book over. Yes, Rolf, she said, staring at him with the face of a hypnotized chicken. Smith forced himself to go on. We've got to face the facts. Unpleasant as they may be, honey, we're the only man and the only woman there are. We're like Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Louise's face took on a slightly disgusted expression. She was obviously thinking of fig leaves. Think of the generations unborn, Smith told her, with a tremor in his voice. Think about me for once. Maybe you're good for another 10 years, maybe not. Shuddering, he thought of the second stage of the disease, the helpless rigidity, striking without warning. He'd had one such attack already, and Louise had helped him out of it. Without her, he would have stayed like that till he died, the hypodermic that would save him within inches of his rigid hand. He thought desperately, if I'm lucky, I'll get at least two kids out of you before you croak, then I'll be safe. He went on, God didn't mean for the human race to end like this. He spared us, you and me, to... He paused. How could he say it without offending her? Parents wouldn't do. Too suggestive. To carry on the torch of life, he ended. There. That was sticky enough. Luis was staring vaguely over his shoulder. Her eyelids blinked regularly, and her mouth made little rabbit-like motions in the same rhythm. Smith looked down at his wasted thighs under the tabletop. Oh, God. I'm just skipping forward to see how much of this I actually want to read on air. Let's see. I think this is okay. Where were we? Smith looked down at his wasted thighs under the tabletop. I'm not strong enough to force her, he thought. Christ, if I were strong enough. He felt the futile rage again and stifled it. And can I just say thank goodness? That's why I wanted to check and see if I could keep reading. He had to keep his head because this might be the last chance. Louise had been talking lately in the cloudy language she used about everything of going up in the mountains to pray for guidance. She had not said alone, but it was easy enough to see that she pictured it that way. He had to argue her around before her resolve stiffened. He concentrated furiously and tried once more. The pattern of words went by like a distant rumbling. Louise heard a phrase here and there, each of them fathered chains of thought, binding her reverie tighter. Our duty to humanity. Mama had often said that was in the old house on Waterbury Street, of course, before Mama had taken sick. She had said, child, your duty is to be clean, polite, and God-fearing. Pretty doesn't matter. There's plenty of plain women that have got themselves good Christian husbands. Husbands to have and to hold. Orange blossoms and the bridesmaids, the organ music. Through the haze, she saw Rolf's lean, wolfish face. Of course, he was the only one she'd ever get. She knew that well enough. Gracious, when a girl was past 25, she had to take what she could get. But I'm 25. But I sometimes wonder if he's really a nice man, she thought. In the eyes of God, she remembered the stained glass windows in the old First Episcopalian Church, and how she always thought God was looking down at her through that brilliant transparency. Perhaps he was still looking at her, though it seemed sometimes that he had forgotten. Well, of course, she realized that marriage customs changed, and if you couldn't have a regular minister... But it was really a shame, an outrage almost, that if she were actually going to marry this man, she couldn't have all those nice things. There wouldn't even be any wedding presents. Not even that. But of course Rolf would give her anything she wanted. She saw his face again, noticed the narrow black eyes staring at her with ferocious purpose, the thin mouth that jerked in a slow, regular tick, the hairy lobes of the ears below the tangle of black hair. He oughtn't to let his hair grow so long, she thought. It isn't quite decent. Well, she could change all that. If she did marry him, she'd certainly make him change his ways. It was no more than her duty. He was talking now about a farm he'd seen outside town. A good big house and a barn. There was no stock, he said, but they could get some later. And they'd plant things and have their own food to eat. Not go to restaurants all the time. She felt a touch on her hand, lying pale before her on the table. Rolf's brown, stubby fingers, black-haired above and below the knuckles, were touching hers. She had stopped talking for a moment, but now he was speaking again, still more urgently. She drew her hand away. He was saying, "And you'll have the finest wedding dress you ever saw, with a bouquet! Everything you want, Louise, everything! A wedding dress, and flowers! Even if there couldn't be any minister, well, why hadn't the fool said so before?" Rolf stopped halfway through a sentence, aware that Louise had said quite clearly, "Yes, Rolf, I will marry you if you wish. Stunned, he wanted her to repeat it, but dared not ask, "What did you say?" For fear of getting some fantastic answer or none at all. He breathed deeply. He said, "Today, Louise?" She said, "Well, today? I don't know quite. Of course, if you think you can make all the arrangements in time, but it does seem..." Triumph surged through Smith's body. He had the advantage now, and he'd ride it. "Say you will, dear," he urged her. "Say yes, and make me the happiest man." Even then, his tongue balked at the rest of it, but it didn't matter. She nodded submissively. "Whatever you think best, Rolf." He rose, and she allowed him to kiss her pale, sapless cheek. "We'll leave right away," he said. "If you'll excuse me for just a minute, dear." He waited for her. "Of course," and then left her, making footprints in the furred carpet of dust down toward the end of the room. Just a few more hours he'd have to speak to her like that, and then, in her eyes, she'd be committed to him forever. Afterwards, he could do with her as he liked. Ugh, God. Beat her when he pleased, submit her to any proof of his scorn and revulsion. Then it would not be too bad, being the last man on Earth. Not bad at all. She might even... Oh, God. She might even have a daughter. He found the washroom door and entered. He took a step inside and froze, balanced by a trick of motion, upright but helpless. Panic struck in his throat as he tried to turn his head and failed, tried to scream and failed. Behind him, he was aware of a tiny click as the door, cushioned by the hydraulic check, shut forever. It was not locked, but its other side bore the warning, "Men." That was, Not With a Bang by Damon Knight. And that was written in, let's see. That was written in, almost there. Let's see, Damon Wright. That one was, so many short stories. There are 50 of them, in fact. There we go. Damon Knight, copyright 1950. You know, sometimes people complain and say that things aren't as like they used to be. And, you know, sometimes it's not the worst thing. That was a... I don't know, it was just... skeevy. And then what a silly twist at the end. Oh, well, at least there was Emerson, Lake, and Palmer as well. And with that... let's transition. I'm gonna switch over to my laptop for a bit. I have some more albums that I want to play, but there are some songs on the computer that I definitely want to play for you guys too. So here's a song by Griffin to start us off on the digital side. I do have this album, but I just didn't bring it with me, and I'm kicking myself now. But here we go. Fontinental version by Griffin.
Head, send it to sleep with the salmon too. Few would they ever think. he's heard he's screwed, ain't he, but sail too far to be scavenging loadable barbecue pit for 8 pounds, brown bound with oil.
This is Mellow Max, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. That last song was Rainbow Trout by the Croaks. Before that was Griffin with Fontinental Version. And now a PSA, read dramatically. The need for blood is constant. Your single blood donation to the American Red Cross can help save up to 3 lives. Be a hero. Donate blood. Visit redcrossblood.org to schedule your appointment.
Too proud to rape, the beginning of a shape of